next Sunday's program.
Welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous, AA Meeting on Air. My name is Steve and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Steve.
Hi, Steve.
I will start our meeting with the Serenity Prayer.
God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
The preamble of Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other, that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any set, denomination, politics, organisation or institution, does not engage in any controversy, and neither endorses or opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. This morning we'll be hearing from three speakers from the Graylin Direction and Strength Group. This group meets every Saturday morning at 9 a.m. in the balcony room of the Graylin Community Centre at 510 Richmond Road, right here in Auckland. Our speakers this morning will be sharing their experience, strength and hope about their journey of recovery from alcoholism. And we'll start the sharing with Katie. Do you want to share?
Hi, thank you. I'm Katie and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Katie. Katie.
I came into the fellowship about 13 months ago when step one became sort of glaringly obvious to me. And I could just no longer ignore the depth of my problem. I'd been a heavy drinker for years and years and years. And after my husband left, my drinking just skyrocketed. And I was having blackouts every other day. And I knew for a long time that I had a very, very deep and real problem, but was just unable to get myself willing enough and desperate enough to get myself to AA. So finally, after some persuasion, I got myself into the rooms, and one of the first meetings I ever went to was the Graylin one, actually. And I remember sort of seeing an awful lot of things on the wall, a whole bunch of steps. And I was fairly unfazed by that, you know, because I'd sort of, being desperate enough, I just thought, well, I'll just sit here and listen and see what happens. Anyway, I sort of quickly grew to realise that sobriety is actually quite a lot of work. But I've been really fortunate enough to sort of meet some incredibly inspirational and good people who've really helped my journey. I managed to get up 7 months when I had a relapse, just for a night, actually. And then a couple of weeks later, I had another one. And I then realised that my sort of emotional sobriety wasn't just about not drinking. My emotional sobriety had been hugely, I'd underestimated it. So I really did start to do far more work than just going to meetings. And I got myself a sponsor who has really taken me under her wing and who's actually travelled a similar path to me too, which has been lovely for me to actually identify with her in that way. So, yes, I've struggled with various aspects. You know, step three is what I've just done. And the higher power idea has not come easily to me. I've often heard that in meetings. But it is just a question of being truly open and willing to the idea. And that fake it till you make it, I don't like the cheesy saying, but it does work and it has worked for me. I've sort of got myself into various habits of praying. I'm not very good about doing it, and I tend to do it sort of when I'm in the car or, you know, when I'm sort of stuck in traffic sometimes. But nevertheless, the sort of consistency of trying to do that and maintain sort of like a routine with my recovery and making sure that I call my sponsor once a week and see her once a week. I've just found that everything seems to have fallen into place a lot more. It doesn't mean that I don't have really bad days, because sometimes these big black holes do creep up on me. They were always there. It's just that I was always able to fill them and get some temporary relief from when I was drinking. So now I do have to actually just sit with them and face them. And that's okay. For me, living in the day is by far and away the most important thing. If I look back at the wreckage of my past, so to speak, or if I look forward too much, I can unravel very quickly. So for me, the easiest thing to do is to just apply various tools that I'm learning along the way to sort of maintain my sobriety just a day at a time. And I can do it in bite-sized chunks like that if I just do a day at a time. So, yes, thank you very much for letting me share, and I'll leave it there.
Great. Thanks, Katie. You're listening to Alcoholics Anonymous AA meeting on air on 104.6 Planet FM. And Patrick, do you want to share?
Hi, my name's Patrick. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Patrick. Hi, Patrick.
Thanks for your sharing, Katie. I really identified with that. I'm an alcoholic. I identify as an alcoholic. Alcoholics Anonymous as a program has helped me immeasurably. It's done things for me that I didn't even know I needed or that were possible. I guess as a kid, I mean, as far back as I can remember, I always felt like I didn't fit in. I never felt at home anywhere. I mean, even at school, I used to run away from school. I hated being told what to do. And I just never felt like I fitted in anywhere. And then when I was about 12 or 13, I started drinking. I first got drunk, I think. And I remember feeling like I'd arrived, you know, that I'd found the bus to get on. And that kind of turned into regular binge drinking. Most weekends, 13, 14 years old. And I remember this feeling like this was my secret thing that I did that nobody needed to know about. And that just made me feel so good. But it just progressed, you know, through my teens into drug use. And for a while it felt good. You know, for those first few years, it was my escape. But during my 20s, it just got worse and worse. And it got to the point where it was a feeling like I was just taking my medicine, that I just needed alcohol or drug to feel normal. And the real turning point for me was the last 2 or 3 years of my drinking, when I started to feel just as desperate, fearful, angry, resentful, depressed, suicidal when I was drinking as when I was sober. And that was a big turning point for me. But it didn't stop me from drinking, because I'm an alcoholic. You know, I kept on trying for those last 2 or 3 years. And I tried everything to stop drinking. You know, just drinking certain drinks, not drinking at certain times of the day, or not only drinking at weekends. For a while, I just did drugs instead. I thought, well, I'm an alcoholic, obviously, so I'll just do drugs. I don't have a problem with them. And, of course, that took me down another dark path. And you know, was going to those first meetings, going to the AA meetings very reluctantly. It'd been at the suggestion of somebody that I might be an alcoholic. And I remember walking through the doors and somebody offering to make me a cup of tea. And I remember thinking, I'm not worth having a cup of tea made for. Why would you want to help me? I thought so little of myself that I was not worth helping. And I remember sitting in a meeting, sitting at the back, not wanting to get involved, but I couldn't escape the fact that I identified with what the people were saying, you know. And this was in a really rough part of South London. There were homeless people. There was also, I mean, it was every different background, every different size and shape and colour. And it's completely irrelevant. Alcohol does not discriminate. Alcoholism, sorry, does not discriminate. And I learned that very quickly. And just going to that meeting and identifying with people, just hearing stuff and going, oh, they know my life. I felt quite paranoid, actually. These people are reading my thoughts. They know my life inside out, what's going on. And so I got into the program. I mean, it took me a few months. I carried on drinking. I would sometimes have a drink on the way home to congratulate myself on going to a meeting, you know, because I knew I needed it. But eventually something twigged, and I think I got to the point where I got desperate enough. Life got so bad that I got desperate enough to be willing to actually do the stuff that was suggested. And for me, it's that little bit of willingness to actually try something that people are suggesting. You sit in a meeting and you're hearing people who are in recovery and they've got some good recovery and they seem like happy people. Why not give it a go? What have you actually got to lose? This is what I ended up feeling like. What have I actually got to lose? You don't need to understand the whole AA program. You know, I don't know if anybody ever does. It really is just about trying what's suggested by other people that have gone before you. You know, what I love, there's no paid professionals in AA. It's all just alcoholics, drunks. We're all just trying to help each other. You know, and that's what we're trying to do today. We're just trying to help each other. And I love that. There's no agenda. There's no target. There's no aims. You know, if you go out and drink, you can come back in. People will welcome you with open arms. But for me, it's just about that willingness. And it is one day at a time. And thank God it's one day at a time, because, you know, the idea of never drinking again always filled me with fear. But it is an abstinence program. And now I don't need to drink. You know, it's by some miracle of the program, the obsession, the mental obsession, the physical obsession, the physical feeling to drink has been taken away. And I never, ever in my wildest dreams imagined that was possible. The other thing that the program has offered me, which is amazing, is, and I didn't realize this, it's not so much the alcohol that's the problem, it's living without it. It's living sober. Trying to live without alcohol, I didn't realize was my problem. You know, and, you know, take the alcohol away and I am left with me. I have to sit with me and all my anxieties and all my craziness. But sure enough, a little bit of abstinence, you know, not drinking those first few months. Yeah, I went a bit crazy at first, but even those first few months of not drinking calmed things down an awful lot. Enabled me to just approach things a little bit more steadily. You know, and I remember one of the important things was to do service, try and do things for other people. And I didn't come into AA to want to help other people. I wanted to get help for me. But what I found very quickly is that by helping other people, I was putting something into my recovery. You know, by helping a newcomer, it doesn't matter what you do. You know, go to meetings, volunteer to make tea, you know, welcome newcomers. It doesn't really matter. As long as you're doing something that takes you outside of yourself a little bit. And I found that really, really valuable. And getting a sponsor as well. But now I can live sober. You know, I can live with myself a bit better. And it is a program for living, if you like. Because I've always felt since I was born, since I was young, that I didn't have the guidebook. I didn't know what the rules were. I didn't care what the rules were. You know, I just wanted to get wasted, you know, act up, be naughty. You know, I still distinctly remember as a school kid, even before I started drinking, I was acting up, you know, shoplifting, setting fire to things, throwing stones at cars. I just wanted a thrill. You know, I didn't care. Before I discovered alcohol, I was all over the shop, you know, and I used to get away with a lot of these things. And now I don't have to do that thrill seeking. I don't feel like that anymore, which is just amazing. I mean, I came into AA maybe wanting to stop drinking a bit or drink a bit less, or work out how I could socially drink. And what I found is a completely whole new way of living, which I can't underestimate. It's completely changed. And I feel so much better about myself, about the world around me. You know, that, and that's what it is, a big thing, is I can't change everything that's going on around me, but I can change how I approach it and how I respond to it. You know, and that's what, when we talk about acceptance in the program, and it is living one day at a time. You know, I can live life on life's terms these days. And it's not that life is suddenly this amazing thing, or, you know, it's that I can accept what's going on in life. And I don't live in fear so much of attempting things or trying things. I'll try new stuff and sometimes I'll fail, but I'm much less afraid of failure these days. And I've got a sponsor, and my sponsor's great. You know, my sponsor's there to keep me honest. My sponsor is not there to necessarily give me sympathy. And I love my sponsor because I phone him up and he will tell me how it is. He will tell me straight, you know. And it's funny, after my first year sober, I remember my dad called me and said, "Congratulations, I mean, you're sober. You've proved your point now. Let's go out drinking this weekend." And I just remember it just rolled off my tongue. I said, "I don't feel like it. I just don't want to." And in that first year, it was a miracle. And in November, I'll be 6 years sober. And I'm not obviously counting the days, the years, but that's just breathtaking for me. That's just, and I don't miss it. I don't want to go back to drinking. I don't miss hangovers. I don't miss how I used to feel, the fear, the desperation, the pain, the anger, the resentment. I just don't miss it. You know, life is much better now. So I'll leave it there. Thank you.
You're with Alcoholics Anonymous, AA meeting on air on Planet FM 104.6. And Michelle, would you like to share?
Thanks. My name's Michelle and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Michelle.
My sobriety date, September 22nd, 1998. I came into AA when I was 28 and I got sober at 29. I drank from 14 to 28. And I'll never forget, you know, picking up my first drink at 14 and feeling like I'd finally found the solution to my life. Like, everything came, and like the planets came into alignment in that moment. And it was definitely the effect I loved from alcohol. Not so much the alcohol, I didn't even really enjoy the taste of alcohol a lot, but I loved the effect. I drank pretty consistently from the age of 14. There were, you know, I didn't really have anyone at home, so I'd come home from school and crack open a beer and didn't think there was anything odd with that. And anyway, I got into quite a bit of trouble with my drinking. You know, I crashed 5 cars, and I always thought there was a problem with the steering. It just didn't occur to me that there was a problem with me and drinking. Honestly, it didn't occur to me. You know, I'd wake up in strange places. I would thought I was the life and soul of the party as I was jumping inappropriately on top of the bar, or, you know, all kinds of stuff was happening. I was constantly broke. I was grey, bloated. You know, I just, it didn't look pretty, yet I didn't think there was anything wrong with what I was doing. I found people who did drink the same way as I did, or people who could kind of keep an eye on me. I had a sort of mixture of friends like that. And I thought I had a lot of problems, but, you know, alcohol wasn't one of them. It was definitely a solution to my life for me. You know, it was like the elixir, like the magic pill I'd always been looking for. But towards the end of my drinking, I didn't actually know it was the end of my drinking. I came as quite a shock, actually. I was in therapy, and I remember turning around and saying to the therapist, "Don't you dare ask me to give up drinking." She said, no, I wouldn't dare. And yet, like, 3 days later, is exactly what I did. I ended up in an AA meeting, and I'd say that was the first one of my miracles. I was actually, at the end of my drinking, I had a job working for the breweries. So I had all my alcohol for free. And it really took me to my knees. That job was such a blessing. And what happened was I went away on a team building weekend with the breweries, and I remember coming out of blackout at 5 in the morning, standing in the rain and thinking, oh my God, what happened? What just happened? I had no idea. And then the next morning having to walk into the breakfast, and for the first time ever, I didn't care what they thought of me. I just thought, I just felt like I was beat. You know, and I really surrendered in that moment. I just thought, oh, who cares? They're not going to remember anyway, you know. And it was out of character for me. So I remember driving back to Auckland, and I was grey, and I paced my house. And I thought, I just had like a flash go before my eyes, and I sort of could see me sitting in the lounge in like 10 years' time and sitting crooning to another CD and drinking another Chardonnay. I thought, that's going to be me in 10 years. Nothing that I want in my life would have happened. Nothing would have changed. And it was like I had a premonition. So I thought I would ring a friend of mine who I knew used to be in AA. And I said to her, I think I'll try and control drinking, because I'd never tried that before. I couldn't see the point. I think I'll just have 2 drinks when I go out and see how I go. And she said to me, oh, no, be realistic, make it 6. And I thought, 6? I knew I can't stop at 6. So I think, you know, it was lucky she said that, because I knew in that moment that I couldn't have one, that there was no stopping me. As soon as I have the first one, that's it. I've got that taste. It's like opening a packet of Tim Tams, you know? If I have one, there's no way that pack's going back in the fridge. No. So, anyway, I decided I'd stop for a month and see if anything in my life changed. It sort of felt like a bit of a challenge to the universe. And in a couple of days into that month, I went to meet a friend at the opening of a play at the old Watershed Theatre in town in Auckland. And it was opening night, and it was like everyone's heads moved at the same moment. And at the far side of the room, I could see a friend of mine, and I knew he was an AA. And I didn't know he was coming to the show. And it was like my second kind of miracle. And I thought, oh, AA. And I was 2 weeks into my non-drinking. And he said, well, you know, come along to a meeting. I'll take you to a meeting. So that Wednesday, he took me to Ōrākei. It was my first meeting. He said, listen to the similarities, not the differences, which was, thank God, because I prided myself on being different. And he said it was an anonymous program, so I looked at the floor and everyone's shoes, so, you know, I'd keep a sort of low profile. But it was like the wall of China was around me, this woman said. If you moved your chair sort of close to me, I'd move mine away. You know, and I thought I was a high-functioning individual with a job, came from a good school, went to private schools, had a nice home. I thought something like this couldn't happen to someone like me. It just didn't seem to compute in my head. Anyway, I listened to that meeting and I listened for those similarities and I heard them coming out of the mouths of 60-year-old men and, you know, 40-year-old women and all this sort of thing. And I thought, wow, what I heard was the way they felt, I identified with. It's the way I felt. And I knew I was home. I knew these people were like me on some deep, dark level, I knew. And they talked about this hole in their soul and trying to fill it up and always feeling like the square peg in the round hole. And I've felt like that my whole life, especially at school or in group situations. That was probably the worst for me. And lots of social anxiety. So having alcohol was just perfect for that sort of thing for me. Anyway, I went off home and I did regularly come to 3 meetings a week. I decided I'd sponsor myself. I thought I would read through the 12 steps as the suggested program. I thought I had the spiritual thing down pat because I'd met a Swami once in Spain, so that was probably done and dusted. And I went absolutely bonking mad. The pain of trying to stay sober in those conditions. I was still working at the breweries, by the way, and wondering how the hell I could get out of there but still pay my rent. It was excruciating. It was the trying to stay and live, like we said, living in reality without something to take the edge off. And everything was triggering me, like the smell of a barbecue, daylight saving, the sound, you know, Friday nights. Friday's my real trigger night. So, you know, in the end, trying to stay sober under those conditions is what brought me to my knees. And I remember, you know, getting on my knees and saying, look, if there is something out there, just for God's sake, help me. Because I knew I was going to either jump back out there and give it another shot or jump into AA. I was sitting on the fence. And the next day I woke up and I felt like something had changed. As corny as it sounds, something had shifted in me. And I thought, you know what, I need to get honest. So I got a new birthday because I'd already actually celebrated a birthday under those conditions and I was smoking a bit of pot on the side and, you know, running my own program. And anyway, I got a new birthday and I got honest. I got a sponsor and I was already doing a lot of service, but I changed my attitude. I went from thinking the groups were using me to actually contributing and realising that this was keeping me sober, that I had the key or the bag or the toaster or something, that they weren't just using me. And also what had happened to me not long after that was when it says that we concede to our innermost self that we're alcoholic, and it's in that big book, and that moment happened to me, and that's when it all really changed. And I used to say I was an alcoholic, and I really wanted to kind of fit in, and I knew I was an alcoholic, but I didn't really want to be one, you know? And I was trying everything in that first year not to be one, so I was like rebirthing, self-help books, more therapy, anything. But what happened was I was driving to the Monday meeting and I thought to myself, you know what, I think I'm a bit schizophrenic and a bit diabetic because I'm carrying a bit of weight and I'm feeling a bit mad. But I'm halfway to the meeting. Sorry to offend anyone out there because I don't know what either of those things meant. I was halfway to the meeting and I thought, well, I'm halfway there, I'll say goodbye to everybody. And I swear not, some woman shared that she thought she was schizophrenic and diabetic. And that moment, I conceded to my inner myself that I was alcoholic. I felt like I'd been squashed on the road by a bus and it was the best place in the world to be. I had no desire to get up. I was just like a pancake. It was amazing. And that's when I thought, well, what do I do? If I am alcoholic and I'm in this program, I can't just keep the seat warm. I looked up the wall at 12 steps and I got on with it. I got into that fourth step, got into, you know, developing a relationship with what they call a higher power. And I thought, well, if I'm going to meet a new friend, I'll spend some time and energy with a new friend. I'll give that a go with a higher power. I used to talk to my higher power through the rear vision mirror of my car. And he was always in the back seat. But, you know, it was silly little things like that, that sort of like I heard, fake it till you make it, that made me now develop this really strong relationship with a higher power. You know, they said it's only one day at a time. After my first meeting, I got home and I thought, shit, does this mean I can't drink at my best friend's wedding? Because, you know, it's always, I'll start on Monday. I'll start after the next party. I'll start, you know, whenever. And I thought, oh, no, that's right. It's only one day at a time. And, you know, 16 years later, she's still not engaged. But, oh, thank God, you know, because that would have been enough for me not to start this program. And since getting sober, you know, all my relationships have changed. I've mended my relationships with my family. I didn't really talk to my mother. I didn't really, you know, I had such resentments against my siblings. I had a lot of resentment with my father. I managed to mend my relationship with my father, and then he died 4 years into my sobriety, so I feel so grateful that I had that time. I've managed to change careers into a career that I still don't understand. I still don't know what I'm doing, but I feel like, you know, it just keeps happening, you know, with this help of a higher power and this fellowship. You know, life has kept happening. I've been through deaths. I've been through lots of, you know, career change, obviously, some tragedies, some great times, moving houses, buying houses, selling houses. You know, all kinds of stuff has happened. Life still happens. Just because I'm an AA and I'm an alcoholic, I'm not immune to... It's not like you've just won a lotto, you know, which I thought it might be. But it's not. But I've been managed to go through everything with the help of somebody in AA. If it's not my sponsor, there's someone else in the rooms that's been through the death of their parent. They've changed careers. I don't know. They're trying to lose weight. They're trying to do something. I don't know. Whatever it is. There's always a thousand million opinions, but I just don't have to do it alone. And, you know, that's probably been the most excruciating part for me, is asking for help. And that just about took me out, and I often share that, how bad it was for me, because I'd hate to think anyone, you know, would not ask for help, because it's just, it helps me so much when I help someone else. But I drove my grandmother's car into the garage. She'd gone into a home and I was looking after her house, or just staying there for free, really. And I drove her little car into the garage, and I was in so much pain in that first year of trying to stay sober, I thought I was going to gas myself. And I hooked up the car and off, turned on the key, sat in the car, and I thought, oh, hang on a minute, this could work, because I'm not out of it. I tried to kill myself a number of times drunk. And anyway, I thought, I'll just go upstairs and have a think about this. Before I, you know, and the phone rang, and it was a woman from AA, and she said, how are you? And I said, I'm good. You know, I just wouldn't ask for help. And that also, that moment brought me to my knees, and I thought, this is just insane. It's insane. So I hope you never get to that point, but because there's so much help in these rooms, and it's just the most, it's the best thing that's ever happened to me, without a doubt. And I'm very grateful to AA. Thanks.
Thanks Michelle. Now, this brings us towards the end of our meeting. Our speakers this morning have been from the Greyland Direction and Strength Group, and these guys meet every Saturday morning at 9 a.m. in the balcony room of the Greyland Community Centre at 510 Richmond Road, Greyland, here in Auckland. If you have a problem with alcohol and you want help, you can phone 0800 AA Works, and this will put you in contact with an AA member in your local area. There are over 100 AA meetings each week within the Greater Auckland area, and for more information, log on to aa.org.nz. Thank you for listening, and we'll be back here again next Sunday at 10:45, and our meeting will have a Tereo theme, and we'll close with a serenity prayer.
God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference.
You can hear this program again at planetaudio.org.nz/AA Meeting on Air.
really tempting to call my program The Awful Messiness of Cancer, but I figured the C word would be easier to remember. Join me, Helen King, as I talk to people about